Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. John Durham, 300-page report for Russiagate these years later and what is to be done. I focus entirely all of my reading on the suggestion and then the evidence and then the presentation that Donald Trump was a stooge of the Kremlin and Vladimir Putin, linked to his campaign of 2015-2016. This was developed in an evidentiary trail that eventually found its way before the FISA court to permit the FBI to widen its examination of suspect individuals in this allegation. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein here of the Hoover Institution, teaches law at the University of Chicago and NYU, to help me understand the FISA court part of the Durham report. Professor, a very good evening to you. The FISA court is an obligation by law enforcement, in this case the FBI, to present its predicate for continuing an investigation of suspects using the apparatus of surveillance and other techniques that ordinarily would be forbidden, presumed forbidden, directed at U.S. citizens. My question is, in this report, it makes it clear that the FBI misled the FISA court repeatedly. And in that misleading, it suggests there's a weakness at the FISA court. To your knowledge right now, can that weakness be corrected? Or is this another example of the administrative state where the judge, jury, and witnesses are all in the hands of the state? Good evening to you.
Yeah, look, it's a very difficult question. The FISA court is the United States Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And it's very clear that the United States has to undertake surveillance in order to keep going. And it's also very clear that they can have serious abuses of this. And so one of the questions is there a place to which you can go in order to have effective and very fast unilateral determinations as to whether or not to continue an investigation into matters that seem to be dangerous with respect to national security? And the original purpose of this was a kind of a reform movement that was put into place in 1978, and the purpose of this was to kind of make sure that we don't have the same kinds of real national catastrophes that you had with the Watergate investigations and things like that. The way the court was originally organized, it was that the Chief Justice, who's the administrative office of the Supreme Court, would appoint all of the judges, and then they would listen and get evidence. Now, I think there are basically two problems that you had with that arrangement. One, I think it's too dangerous to give all the power to appoint an entire court to a single person without any other check and balance. And so I would much prefer, if you had nine members, to have each member of the Supreme Court make one of the appointments so that there would be no systematic bias which reflected the preferences one way or another of the Chief Justice. Now, I don't even know what they are. The Chief Justice is notoriously hard to read when it comes to the question of how much deference is he going to favor in the Supreme Court. I think the answer is now he's more suspicious of deference than he was 5 years ago, and certainly at the time of these events, even more suspicious now than then. The problem that the FBI has is it has to show something that looks like probable cause. So you start this investigation, and as Durham points out, the original contact with Papadopoulos and some mysterious Australian minister are far too weak, so long as a major national security investigation without doing some kind of a preliminary investigation before, which would consist of looking at the available information that you have in store right at hand to see whether anything points in the same direction that might give bolster to those kinds of reports. There was no effort whatsoever on the part of the FBI to do a small internal investigation before they wanted to go and after sort of other targets. And so they go there, they get probable cause. And you mentioned Chevron. Chevron deference is that the judiciary defers to the legislature and the administrative agencies of the legislature in the interpretation of federal statutes. Well, deference on this is not that. It's a different form of deference. We think the FBI is a bunch of good guys. And so therefore, when they are telling us that they have information, we are confident that they've done enough internal checks that what they're giving us is the truth. And so your standard of review is, unless this thing smells extremely rotten at the outset, we're going to give them their way. They go back several times, and each time the evidence gets thinner and thinner, and each time the prevarications get larger and larger, and they don't pick it up. Now, this is not news. The Horowitz report pointed the same thing, and it turned out they kind of did some kind of internal review with respect to it. But it's a deep structural issue. And so I think what happens is you could reform the FISA court by being tougher with respect to the standards that you do, allow in some cases perhaps a greater use of non-ex parte hearings, listening to other people, having greater powers of cross-examine on this thing, allowing them to delay a little bit longer to ask for a little bit more information and so forth. But it turns out I don't think you can just get rid of this kind of an operation. Time is of the essence when you're worried about national security issues. So it comes down, John, to the same thing that everything comes around. The most profound sentence in many ways in the entire Federalist Papers is the remark of James Madison that enlightened statesmen will not always be at the helm. And so what you're trying to do is repair a government that can deal with the real downside in human beings. Now, when it comes to the passage of legislation, there are ways to do that. So slow, it's a deliberative process, you have lots of people involved, and you can develop checks and balance and presentment rules and all the rest of that stuff in the veto power. But when it comes to running investigations, there's no way that you can sort of make an investigation work if you have unenlightened investors. You know, investigate isn't the FBI or an unenlightened president doing it. So when the powers are really concentrated, it's much harder to use a system of checks and balances to make this thing work, even though I gave you some ways in which you could try to do it. So with all of this stuff going on, so it turns out when you start looking at the way these things start to operate, what you discover is that the personnel dimension is the single most important dimension. There are procedural reforms that I've mentioned which could make a difference. But in the end, what I think it becomes more and more important is the single most important unappreciated power that we have throughout every complex organization is the appointments power. Who gets to appoint who and how do they decide what that appointment should be? And I'm sorry to say that I think that the sort of vaunted professional independence of the FBI and the other administrative agencies has been much compromised these points, so that these people become conscious political actors. So the difference between having a Democratic head of the Federal Trade Commission and a Republican head is night and day. It's not just a question of a small move with respect to the needle. And I think that in these polarized times, I think the Democrats are really guilty of this even more than the Republican, is the use of political and sloppy appointment at every level of the system is what compromises it and creates this kind of catastrophe. Can you do the reform? You can do the structural reforms. But again, the maxim is always the same. If you have good people and imperfect rules, you're better off than if you have bad people and very good rules.
What I learned from the report, Professor, is that there were many good people at the FBI who recognized that the evidence was inadequate. I'm thinking in particular of the Steele dossier, inadequate and highly suspect. And yet, because the leadership of the FBI determined to present this to the FISA court in a winning fashion, there was no ability of the apparatus itself, the state itself, to either override, reply, or challenge the decision of the leadership. So that would be an example of what you said, bad people with good rules. But I'm not sure that they're good rules here because they didn't think through the likelihood of corruption at the top.
Well, that's always the problem. Quis custodius custodiae? Who guards the guardian? Is the perpetual question of political theory. We don't have an answer to that question. But there's also Epstein's other rule, the rule of diminished magnitudes. It is amazing, even in large institutions, how much of the political power is concentrated at the top. So if you're the number one guy, your coefficient of efficiency is 1.0, whatever you want goes. You're a number two guy, you're 0.1. A number three guy, you're 0.01. And all the people who have the sense were down at the second and third tiers, and their influence, if you add it up, doesn't get to the position of the number one guy. That's why the political appointees are so absolutely critical. That's why when you start looking at corporate and management structures, the amount of time that people spend on figuring out how you make the appointment of the chief executive officer of a firm, i.e. the president of a nation or the head of a bureau, is the major task of these boards. Because if you get the wrong guy at the top, everything goes wrong. They make wrong decisions themselves, and then they appoint people who are going to make other wrong decisions, and then they're going to appoint other people who do the same thing, and there'll be a professional cohort beneath them, and they'll be systematically overridden and ignored. It's a form of organizational pathology, which is harder in government than it is anywhere else, and more difficult to measure because you're not knowing what you're trying to produce in government, right? I mean, it's not as though you have a P&L statement at the end of the year, which is, hey, this administration is running us into the ground. You don't even know half the decisions that are made, and it's very difficult to do it. The fact that this thing even bubbled up in the way it's done is a real utter condemnation of the FBI and of the administrative state. And remember, this has been going on at least since 2014, 2015.
Yes, let's put some names in this, Professor. We have sure. Mr. Comey, Mr. McCabe, and Mr. Baker, who was the chief counsel of the FBI.
Lisa Page and Strutt. You also have Hillary Clinton.
No, but I'm talking about the top leadership. As I understand it now, they vouchsafed this corruption of the FISA process for their own ambitions, which was to reverse the decision of 2016 or to make this decision of 2016 favor their candidate. However, I do not see that those individuals have paid any penalty for corrupting the FBI or the FISA court, and the product is a complete undermining of confidence in the apparatus of the FBI and the FISA court.
Well, naturally, you understate the difficulty. I'm being facetious because what's happened is in this last election, we now know that the disinformation campaign run by the CIA types to discredit Trump as a Russian stoolie and all the rest of that stuff, misinformation on Hunter Biden, is the same kind of an activity. And so what happens is this kind of partisan rot transcends the judicial system to the political system. But I would have thought former heads of the CIA would be duty-bound to make sure that they were right rather than not read the information on which they purport to comment, i.e. the contents of this thing. And when they know, this is the same point you made before, that all the people who are experts on the Russia deck, they refuse to look at this thing. They didn't want to have any part of it. They said the evidence is not there. And so what you're seeing, again, is the political actors sort of upset the low-level permanent bureaucracy on this. And, you know, that kind of information institutional expertise is absolutely critical. Same thing has happened, by the way, at the FTC. The uproar inside that organization, because Lina Khan is a petty dictator, and she doesn't give any people sort of independence of thought or the independence of action, which makes them want to keep their job. So this essentially is the serious problem in one sentence, is there is an undue concentration of governance power in the hands of the leader of a single organization, and there seems to be nothing that is being done today that will alter that.
And in your measure right now, are we any more protected from this same scenario today than we were in 2016?
Weakly so, but not strongly so. The weakness is in the fact that we don't have institutional reforms and we don't have anybody in these offices that we have confidence in. I think the improvement is that the willingness of the public to believe the whitewashes is going to be reduced because it's been so difficult. And therefore, the political gains that you get from engaging in this kind of skullduggery will be reduced. And if the gains are going to be reduced, there'll be marginally less willingness in order to commit it. But this is not a sea change. It's an incremental change. And I think one of the things that one has to do is to keep the pressure up. And some of the investigations that are coming out in the Republican side of the House of Representatives are really indicative of kind of a systematic rot that has taken place. throughout all this situation. Right. And I can't think of a single act done by a Republican that has had the same purport as any of the things that we've talked about in connection with the FISA court or the CIA investigation or with any of the other investigations that have taken place. This is strictly a one-sided venture at this particular point, justified on the ground that Donald Trump is so terrible that any means to dislodge him is going to be there. And I'm not trying to defend Donald Trump. I would dearly hope he would withdraw from the race tomorrow. But it's one thing to wish for something politically, and it's another thing to bring it about by a series of illegal maneuvers that are designed to expose people to serious criminal liability for things they didn't do.
Let's leave the FISA court and go to the Supreme Court. This is Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow of the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.